Ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes. Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them. And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order. Hello and welcome back to Trapped by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. If you're listening to this, this is once again the re-release of my conversation with Orhan from Replayer. I'm releasing these at the same time as part one. And again, we're bringing this back because the questions haven't stopped. In this part, we get into more of the details, the cost, the why the systems are built, what the companies are actually prioritizing, and things like AI analytics really stand today. If you're trying to make a decision for your team or just trying to understand what you're investing in, this is where the conversation really starts to matter. So let's start this chat and head to the pitch. Because talking to even people that take game statistical data, their software doesn't calculate it correctly. They have to manually go watch the game and make sure it's actually adding up all the passes correctly because the AI technology is not there yet.
This is another part where I have strong opinions on because I just see how the bread gets made. When you see that, then you can't help but think a certain way. I don't want to say your morals, but maybe your personality, and then you speak in the direction or way that you should or you want to. I am gonna say that I'm not a big believer in AI doing stats. I think it's doable. I'm not saying that it's not doable. I just don't think we're there yet. But maybe there's another discussion here. We should be upfront with ourselves and ask, if the AI is not perfect, should we just accept it for what it is? Maybe, if we're okay with that. I think if we say it's not perfect, let's accept it for what it is. But I just don't think it's being marketed as such, right? It's not like a work in progress. It's more, here's the final product. I can give a ton of examples, but let's say a car, right? Like it's supposed to drive, but it only drives like half the time. You should be upfront about that from the very beginning, I think. So
I agree with you. Talking to a lot of these folks that I have interviewed, which has yet been released, an episode about player statistics, and they have an analyst sitting watching it, and they need the roster. So it's not 100% accurate using AI. And I think this is something that is being marketed with a lot of camera systems currently that are out there that are using AI and saying, look at us, look at us. We have all these powerful tools. We can say, tell you how accurate your pass percentage is. And come to find out, it's only 75% accurate because it couldn't read your jersey number correct because it was reading.
Yeah, and it's a selling point, man.
It is.
I'm talking about a market that is not recording over a billion hours of footage. Should we like jump straight to the top and say, give me the stats, or should we just take care of this problem first? Let's just make the footage more accessible. So going back to your question, no, mm-hmm. we don't do analytics and we will not do analytics. We will do something else. We will, our cameras will integrate with others that do analytics and obsess over analytics. We were in the MLS Innovation Lab. MLS formed an innovation lab for the first time ever. They looked at various companies. I think it was like 60 something companies around the world. They ended up inviting six of us. There was us as the camera company, and there was another analytics company called Fit Together in there. Got to know them. Great group of people. They have a phenomenal product. And I mean that in every sense. For instance, they obsess over that. And we obsess over what we obsess over. So if you really want analytics, and if you are really serious about stats and analytics and whatever that gets you, then integrate. Use Fit Together with Replayer. When you save your footage will go directly over to them. They'll do what they need to do and deliver the end product to you. That we won't focus on analytics, but we will focus on everything else, from capturing the footage in its best way, from getting that to whoever in the fastest and the easiest way. We have to first take care of the basics. These analytics companies, they too need footage, Ian. Without that, they don't have a business. Someone has to capture it. And I hate to say this, it probably sounds funny, but we're not a camera company either. I don't categorize us as a camera company. Now, we're a media company. We have to have the best camera to be a media company. It's just the irony of this game that we're in. So in order to have the best media or the experience, it just happens to be that we have to build the best camera out there. But I don't think we should ever settle or categorize ourselves as a camera company. This is not to talk them down or anything. GoPro is a great company, but I don't want to end up like a GoPro. When you think of GoPro today, you think of exactly that. Everyone listening to this, you think of the hardware, the little camera in your hand. I don't want to be that. I don't think this is more than that. Everything we do on the camera is software, is the software. Our main IP is the software, whether it's on the camera or in the cloud, in the GPUs that we might lease out. It's the software that makes up Replayer and how and what we offer. I don't want to be known as one. And then also, we won't do analytics, but that doesn't mean we won't do everything you just talked about. We will do auto tagging. We just want to do a good job at that. We will do auto highlight generation. We just want to do a good job with that. We just want to climb this ladder, maybe slowly but surely, go faster when we need to. Maybe in this podcast, we'll also touch on the budget discrepancy between us and others. I think a lot of people don't know that we've only raised shy of 3 million in our lifetime, whereas VO has raised, I think, around 200 million or more. We're talking about, you give me an example, we're talking about Man City playing, I don't know, not even an MLS team. Maybe I'll pick a club team, youth club team here in the area.
I think you hit it right on the head. I think most people think, how do I describe this? Most companies try to capture too much and not actually have, and this is getting off tangent a little bit. This is more corporate structure of businesses, but you said it over and over. You're not a camera company. You're a software company trying to be the best at what you're doing. I think a lot of these companies that are in the same market that you are in are trying to do too much. And their product is not high quality because of it, because they are not perfect in capturing the camera, like not capturing the moments. It has its own limitations because they're more focused on five different avenues of revenue streams coming in versus, like you said, you want to be the company that is producing media for people to watch their athletes and trying to leverage some of that 4 billion hours that you keep on talking about of youth playtime that's missing. And how do we do that? And I think having camera systems at a reasonable price and able to be affordable for families to have is so critical. You talked about hitting costs. I sit down this past year and I put together a survey for my son's team, actually for multiple teams, but I could use the same information across the board. And what I did was I sat down and figured out how much it would cost just to watch, to download the games and send it out to families. Mm-hmm. You can talk about it and correct me where I'm wrong. So in your system, yours is more of a lease program, correct? Where as long as you're paying that monthly fee, you have access to the camera. Now, if you use some of these systems, you have to A, first buy the camera, and then that gets upgraded every year or every 18 months. You're out that money at the end of the day. The families are out that money. The teams are out that money because they have to go spend $1,800 every year or every 2 years upgrading hardware. This is where I think you have a very unique system, the way you described it to me. Some, you rent the camera and you pay for a service on top of that. So you pay, I'm going to throw it out there, parents can figure out, you pay $500 a year to rent the camera, and then you pay another $1,000 for their service or $1,500 for their service. So you've already invested $2,000 into this system and you're stuck with the same camera until it breaks and you have to send it back. Most of the other ones, you buy the hardware and then you just pay for the packages to go with it. And like the first year can be the cheapest. I think I found one was about $2,200. And the most expensive system out there runs about, out the first year is about $3,500, depending on the camera you get and what packages you get. And I think it actually slightly higher because one of them, I don't even think I could find the price for the camera because they didn't disclose it on their website. So I completely left it out of my survey for my parents. And that kind of broke my heart. So I only had four camera systems I provided. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that's expensive I found out of the gate and as a parent is, but they all have it. That's all part of it. You require a case and the tripod to be bought. Mm-hmm. All the other ones require you to buy the same thing. So it's not like it's something that's unique, but your actual yearly cost was significantly lower. Yeah. And we can talk about all the other.
Let's talk about that for a bit because the timing of this podcast is also interesting because we're actually considering a change in pricing. Let's talk about the pricing that you just mentioned and then the pros and cons and the market itself when it comes to pricing. I think my father was a serial entrepreneur and he used to say the most critical part of any business is its pricing of its products. And we need alignment here. So I'm going to say it again. And the first thing I did was run that survey throughout the nation to understand what people are willing to pay. And then we went and innovated. And our pricing is still today, as of now, is $1,188 for the whole year. And the camera that's $1,499, pretty much $1,500, is paid by us. And it's quote unquote leased out to folks. Nothing is free in life. And that camera cost, we bear the cost of that. So people listening to this might say, and it might chuckle actually, and then say, why the hell, if they're underfunded, if they have not raised nearly as much as VO in the 200, 250 million, such as Pixelot, they are doing this. We're a mission-oriented company. We want people to be able to record. And so we decided that we want to bear this cost and make this work. And so up until still today, that's our pricing. You go on our site, you get a replay, and we send you the camera, and that's what you pay for the subscription. We are thousands and thousands of dollars. When you do what you just described in an Excel sheet and you do that, let's say you're going to hold on to the camera for 3 years, you do that, you're going to see that we are at least $3,000 to $4,000, $5,000, or $6,000 cheaper than others. That's not a little bit of money. But this came at the expense of the company's growth. And so when you're not collecting the capital for this cost driver that you have, you're growing very slow or to a point where you're idle. And there are a couple of things you can do. One is you can raise capital from investors, outside investors, and continue to provide this model. Or you can not do that and grow with your community. The difference between the two is when it's time to actually make the right decisions, you can still do so when you receive the feedback from the community. Whereas when you're with investors, you might get nudged in the ways that they want you to be nudged. And so who loses at the end? the athletes and the parents, and then it trickles its way up. You said two words that stuck with me and I wrote it down. You said parents will invest and then they're stuck with a camera. I think if you, the word invest is fine, but if you and others, and I've heard that word before too, say that you're stuck, there's something wrong there. Why do you feel that you're stuck? It's either that you think what you're paying for is not the right value that you should be paying for it, or you're not getting enough from that system. We need to fix that. And it's fine investing in your kid's future or your team's future, but you shouldn't feel like you're stuck. So now we're at this fork road, right? We have this dilemma where we're giving away the camera. We have the cost of the camera that we bear, all in the of this mission that we have to get athletes discovered. Now we're also not growing fast enough. So we've been for the last, 12 months internally have been collecting data and discussing how do we move forward from here? Do we go raise a lot of capital and keep it the way it is? Or do we change our business models? So we've been exploring ways to do this and do charge for the camera, but still do it so in a way where we're giving a lot of value. And when someone is purchasing a replayer, they do not feel like they are stuck. These might come off as just words to people right now. I want to take a second here and put a lot of emphasis on this word stuck. Imagine a table, an imaginary table, and we're sitting on this table. I always say to my team members too, whatever we do, whenever we do, whatever we do, imagine that we're sitting on a round table and we're all a team. We're on that table as a replayer, a parent's on that table, an athlete's on that table, and we're collectively making decisions. It can never be a rectangular table and we sit on this side and then parents sit on the other side and we say, yeah, well, this is our cost and you have to pay for this. This is only what we'll give you and so be it. What I want to connect to is the other thing that you said, the third thing after stuck is you have this thing and you have to go invest in it again and again every single year. So what we have done with our cameras is we have modularized the cameras. We actually did this for ourselves, but you'll see why in a second. This is applicable to this part of the conversation. We did it to ourselves because we needed to innovate fast. And so this is a brand new market. Today, Replayer has three 4K cameras in the front. What if you want to go with a bigger lens? What if you want to go to four 4K cameras in the front? What if you want to put a different chip in there? What if you want to extend the LED lights on the sides? What if you want to make them smaller? I can keep giving you so many what ifs. And every time you want to touch any part of any other camera in the market today, put Replayer aside, you have to go through the entire manufacturing cycle. And who pays for that cost? You, the parent. And so every year, it's that, call it the iPhone model, and we all know that, right? And you are pitched with this product, and it says camera 2, camera 3, camera 4, camera 5, 17, 20, 32. And every year, we got to sell you a camera. And so now, if we are not a camera company and we don't identify as one, then we won't even get into that game or even ever think about it. And that's exactly what we do. So we modularize the camera. That looks like is, let's say we innovated and we want to go to a 4K camera system in the front of the replayer. We will notify our customers. We will say, here's an upgrade. This is what that looks like. Here's the upgrade fee, much less expensive or cheaper than buying a new camera. Stay where you are if you're happy. But if you want to go to this next upgrade, it's like sending your iPhone in and then they put in the new cameras and send them back to you. So same thing here, you'll send it to our facilities, and I haven't mentioned any of this at all. I'm surprised on this podcast so far. We are a fully US-based company headquartered in Los Angeles, California, and we R&D and manufacture with brilliant people in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. All of our engineers are ex-Carnegie Robotics folks. They're from Carnegie Mellon, and they are just brilliant, brilliant people. We're probably, honestly, the only camera company. I know VIO has their internal team, and I don't know them really well. So if anyone does, please LinkedIn me and educate me. But as far as I'm aware, we're the only camera company that has this much talent on the hardware side in under one roof. The camera will go there. We'll take out the front interface of the camera with the three camera sensors that I just mentioned, and then we'll insert a new front housing to the camera and send the camera back to the user and off to the races. This, just that right there, is just an innovative piece and something unique. And hopefully, going back to the word stuck, people don't actually feel stuck. They, you know, do you pay for Amazon Prime, Ian?
Yes.
Do you ever feel like when it comes out of your wallet once a year, you're like, darn, this sucks. Why do I pay for it?
Some years not. But most years, it is what it is, because you get a lot of benefits from it. That's what I'm looking at. Yeah. I looked at your system, and that's the one thing I like is how it's modular. I was trying to figure out how to work it in, and I'm glad you brought it in, because someone that deals with me as an individual that deals with IT stuff, mm-hmm. being able to just replace one component of a piece of hardware is so critical, and making it, if there's a small fee, if it's a large fee, you aren't stuck. You can still you aren't exchanging the whole camera. You're just paying for whatever upgrade that's there. And I don't think, first, there's no other system out there. I know there's not to knock any of the other camera systems, but I on all the forums, I read them all. And the number one complaint is that they'll send their camera system in and they'll get something back that's older than what they originally had. It's because they don't have the product on hand. Mm-hmm. And the clients, I'm done. Like, I'm done with this company. I'm going to go try someone else. And I think what you're trying to do and what you're able to do with being a modular system allows those capabilities where families aren't feeling stuck. Clubs aren't feeling stuck. It's a small fee or whatever it may be to upgrade. And I don't think if you can keep the same shell and everything the same, I think you're going to have a lot of success with that process.
Yeah. One more thing on that word stuck, because now I'm going to give you an anecdote of a moment where people do actually get stuck and how we also make a difference there too. Because our cameras are connected to the cloud via the built-in SIM. Let's say you're at a field and you're running into an issue. Happens, man, right? Well, guess what? Because the cameras are connected to the cloud, we can actually see what's happening on the camera, and we can actually remotely connect to the camera and hopefully fix that right then and there. There's no other camera on the market today that allows an engineer to connect to it from wherever the heck they are and identify it and then have it fixed for it. If anything, even if there's no fix, just being able to identify that little quirk you just found is a huge, huge valuable thing, and we'll fix it for others. Anyways, another thing I just want to say to everyone listening is that we're trying to do the right things across the board. Just like you mentioned several times, I'm certainly not trying to talk down any of the camera guys out in the space. This is a very tough problem. I'm glad we're all doing it together. I'm glad we're all uncovering new information and then acting on them together, because at the end of the day, the athletes don't care if it's a replay or a VO or a trace or whatever. They just want their footage, man. This is a healthy competition, and we're in this race. It's a race, right? To do better and offer something better. And I just want Replayer to always be on the side of shoulder to shoulder with our end users, whether they're our parents, coaches, athletes, etc. And through this podcast, hopefully for people to know exactly where we stand at that too.
I'm going to go back to your live streaming, because that's where my brain is stuck right now. On your LinkedIn account, I do follow you all on LinkedIn, and you had a client and he was watching his team play at 30,000 feet.
Yeah.
As a parent, I found that to be very impressive, because it just shows how far capturing moments for parents to watch their players play this beautiful game is able to do it. I'm one of six kids, and I have family all over the country. My siblings are all over the country. I have my mom and my stepdad that spends half the year in New York, half the year in Florida, and my brother lives in the same county as them in New York State, but the rest of my siblings, we're all over.
Yeah.
And for them to be able to watch my son play soccer or my daughter to play soccer is a big deal to me, because
yeah.
It shouldn't be only in the moment while they're visiting us. And like I said, it's like my day job allows me to have the easier chance to go visit them. But at the same time, for them to still feel close to their family and their nieces and nephews or grandparents, their grandkids, or your best friend watching your kids play, I think that's so critical. And having technology that's being leveraged to allow this and allow it at a, I would call a reasonable price to be done is amazing. There's so many things that have crossed my mind because my mind is in five different places dealing with this because of conversations I've had in the last 3 weeks, even has changed my perspective of how to help and change a culture here in the United States. And with that being said, how do you plan on moving forward with the company from being just the media company that you are to being more than a media company? You talked about having, I would call it, more strategic partnerships with things and mm-hmm. our people. How do you plan on leveraging what you have and having those partnerships in the future?
So that was a parent who couldn't make it to his son's game. And not only he was watching the live stream from 30,000 feet, he actually started the live stream from 30,000 feet because the cameras have remote connectivity. I often say, and I know this happens, you don't need to be on those sales, quote unquote, sales calls. You don't need to be next to the camera to connect to it. I know that as a parent, sometimes you need to make a dash to the grocery store to get Gatorade, but you forgot to hit record, don't worry about it. Pull out your phone and connect your camera from wherever you are and hit record. So I'm very proud of those moments. I think the answer to your question is along the same lines, which is for us on the wall, it's not how many cameras we sold or how many subscriptions we sold. It's more like how many clips have been shared today. I'm going to say it, like, I just want people to understand the sadness of the situation. There's over 1 billion hours of content not being recorded. If they are recorded, then our kids are sharing those moments. Today, I joke around, but it's the truth. Today, you can be sewing at home, put an iPhone in front of you, record that moment, post it on social media, and some sewing company eventually will come to you if you're consistent enough and say, you have an audience, people like you, can I advertise with you? Can you mention my brand and you'll make money from it? And that's just your side hobby. Maybe you have a full-time job, you probably do. And so as an athlete, the coolest kids on the block have no media in their hands, therefore they don't even exist in today's creator economy. That's unacceptable. I think we do a disservice to them. As Replayer, we're going to continue making this. I'm making it almost sound like we're this nonprofit, but this is what it really means to us. I think you can be a for-profit company and still have a strong stance at something. And this is it, man. Like we collectively, we have to do this. This is not just Replayer's thing. These are about young athletes. This is about young athletes. And we're going to make capturing footage better. We're going to make live streaming better. We're going to make it more accessible. And if people are interested in partnering with us, and they mean to do so, we partner with Native Frame, a live streaming company. They are phenomenal at what they do. They came to us and said, we can take live streaming to the next level. And our vision's aligned. They're great people. That was a partnership. And so if there's any other company out there that's hungry and thinks they can be of value in this path forward for sports tech, especially in this department, then hit us up on LinkedIn or wherever. It's not rocket science. The technology might be a little difficult, but we'll figure it out. I think more importantly, it's the mission, it's the approach, and the sentiment behind it. Even if you're not doing anything with us or partnering with us, spread the word or send some love. We got to figure this out, man. This is a serious problem. I know we don't talk about it. You talk about it. You're one of the few people that talks about this stuff on your podcast, but we need to do more talking about this problem.
That's the thing. It's like watching games. As a parent, I think the most influential thing for any athlete is watching the sport. And I think it's more important watching themselves. And you can go out and watch 100 EPL games, but if you're not going out there and seeing yourself doing it,
yeah,
or seeing, like, comparing your movement to them, What?
I said, or cringe at doing it. I remember watching myself and cringing. And that's probably one of the biggest learning lessons I'll never forget.
I think if players can see, oh, I did not scan well enough. This was the path I need to take. Like listening to the coach with my son this weekend saying, you made the right decision, but you could have done this and the ball might have gotten up the field differently. And hearing him say that, and I feel like my son's very intelligent, but for him to visually see it, because most people are visual learners, especially kids are visual learners. They don't learn by audio. They learn by seeing, repeating, and doing. And this is why they're little the sponges that they are. And I think having, like you said, if we could capture 100 million more hours a year of youth sports and trying to motivate parents and clubs to actually be proactive with this, I think kids going out and watching themselves play, like you said, even on the car ride home, I couldn't even imagine finishing up the game. By the time we walk to the car, he can grab one of our iPhones and sit down and rewatch his game and on the way home and be content for the next 30 minutes because he's reliving the loss or the win or those emotions he had, and he can see why he lost his cool or the joyous moments of landing a great corner kick and the team assisting with a goal or taking a free kick and realizing, wow, that was a really bad kick. Why it was off by 15 feet to the right and 30 feet off the ground, and reliving those moments and seeing it. I can't fathom that with the current systems out there, but you're getting to that moment and trying to get to that moment. And I don't know if parents truly understand. There's a big debate right now in the world of youth sports of that 10,000 hour rule. Mm-hmm. You can master something in 10,000 hours of doing it. And the big debate is, do you actually have to be doing it, or could you be watching someone else do it and learning to be better? And there's a whole psychology on this right now. And it's amazing that the one thing they do talk about with athletes is video at any age and rewatching them, because watching themselves, because they learn by their own mistakes. And not every athlete can sit down and watch 60 minutes of soccer again, but most kids will sit down and rewatch themselves because it's them. And this comes back, and this is a whole side tangent, but like you said, I like the live tagging, and you can bring this all back full circle where we started with some of the stuff. It is the live tagging where players can tag themselves, or parents or a coach can tag themselves, and you can have that individual comment on that tag. Me as a parent, if I tag something, or if I'm coaching, and I would have loved this when I coached my son at 6 and 7, tagging that moment, a moment in a game, explaining to parents, like, can you talk to your player about this? And you can have a whole side conversation with not ever actually watching the film together. I don't think there's anything out there like that. There's the whiteboard that goes in some of these programs, but it's not the live game. It is taking reference points from the live game. I think that's what you're doing and trying to do, is setting up a lot of success. I was talking to a coach telling him, like, you can live tag the game and put comments in as the game's going on, so you have that moment to remember. And I go, I can't imagine, because unless you keep a notebook while you're walking and you write down the minute everything happens, you won't remember. And then you have to go back. And what you think in that moment and then when you think when you rewatch it are two different things.
Yeah, I think you nailed all of it. I'm going to criticize us a little bit more so that we can push the boundary a little bit, because that's exactly why we created live tagging. But that can't be the end of the game there. I think going back to your examples of the kid, right, pulling out the iPhone and getting access to the footage and watching that game, etc., that part we need to just dial the F in. Like, that needs to be, like, the access to footage needs to be, whoever it is, not just a player, not just a parent, not just a scout, recruiter, whoever it is, boom. Like, that, priority number one, right? Give me the footage. Priority number two, don't make me do the work. So my dream scenario is I get in the car as an athlete and Replayer goes, hey, Orhan, here are 12 moments from that game. right? As soon as that. Now I look at those 12 moments, the good and the bad. And internally, what we focus on at Replayer is, right, there are two different types of content, right? There's that content that lends itself to positive reinforcement, and then there's that content that lends itself to negative reinforcement. Let's take positive for a minute, and this is what we really want to dial into. I had a great play. I had a good move. I scored a goal. I had a good save. Replayer should tag that and send that over to the athlete. People are more likely to watch themselves do good things than the cringy stuff. And so we'll take a backseat on the cringy stuff and we'll pass those clips over to the coaches so they can do the tough job. But my point is, regardless of how old you are, you can be 6, 7, 12, 14, 16, 18, 36, whatever it is, you're going to want to watch the good moments. But going back to the kids, the best part is that if let's say those 12 moments that we just said, hey, what was your kid's name again? Landon. Landon, 12 moments from your game, take a look. And let's just say that 12 of those moments are moments he shined in. How is he going to feel after watching that? Hopefully, you respond.
It's the positive reinforcement of everything. I think
this
is the world that I've been in for 18 months is sports psychology, trying to help my son have a better mental game. And seeing what they do well is so critical as being told what they need to improve on. It's changing the verbiage of how we do things. And video is part of that verbiage. It's a visual context of what we're trying to tell our players. It's my son came home this weekend and told me he played horrible in two out of the three matches he played. And I turned around and told, or four, let me think about this, or however many matches he played this weekend. He told me he played horrible in all but one. And I'm like, bud, one of these games was one of the best games I've seen you do X, Y, and Z. And this is the best game I've seen you do this type of movement in. And this is the best game I've seen where you can keep your emotions under control.
Mm-hmm.
And having that positive reinforcement. But in his mind, he did horrible because two of those games they lost. He felt like he could have done more. And having that video to show him how great he was is a game changer. You can only say so much. They have to visually see them excelling. And having those 12 highlight reels moments in that moment would be huge because that would show what he was successful. And I don't think we're able to capture all those. And they don't think they remember it because our bodies, there's a stat. In a 90-minute match, you might have... Or in a day, not a match. In a day, you have 60,000 thoughts, something like that. 40,000 of those thoughts are negative thoughts. And I'm thinking, okay, let's break this down to a soccer match. And in that soccer match, you might have 10,000 thoughts. And of those 10,000 thoughts, 6,000 of them are negative. How do we flip that script for these players? It's by their footage. And by showing where they excel, and when they get upset, they can say, look, I can think back to that moment where I accelerated. I can go do that again. And we don't, like you said, we don't have a billion hours are not being recorded. How do we capture those moments so they can accelerate and have that positive visual message of themselves?
Dude, you just nailed it. I love these anecdotes. One that really stuck with me was the way that Michael Phelps was trained. He wore blacked out goggles. At least his coach made him do, and he needed to visualize his race. And that's how he trained. The power of seeing, right? Visualization. I think you nailed it. The thing about positive reinforcement that we really talk about and lean into and want to lean into even more next year is those 12 moments say that they are those good moments for Landon. He watches those moments, then now he understands what he does great. Then he saw himself do something great, then now he's more likely to be able to repeat that. There are two types of things we can do. One is continue doing things we're good at. You're hired at your job because you're good at what you do day in, day out. And there are things that we're not so good at. I'm not a great cook, for instance. Can I be a better cook? Absolutely. Can someone teach me how to be a better cook? 100%. There are things I'm very good at. If I see myself do those things, will I perform them even better and maybe more efficiently, or have more cognizance around what I'm actually doing, even in that moment, to a point where I can even slow down time, especially on a soccer field. 100%. I've lived that as well. And so that's really where we're coming from, is that's what I mean. Live tagging, great. This and that, great. Let's get the footage recorded every single time, priority number one. Let's get the footage into everyone's pockets as fast as possible, priority number two. Let's make now their job incredibly easier after that by automating and these reels and being able to ping you as a parent or your son or your daughter and say, here are all the moments that you were shining in, priority number three. Priority number four, let's also give some notes, maybe feedback from analyzing the game to the coaches on the things that the team can work on. At least that's the way we see it. These are obviously very high level things, and put in such way, there's a lot of work we need to do and roll up our sleeves to do so. That's what we signed up for. That's why, for some reason, I left my job that I really liked doing, started Replayer.
And I think that's the thing. I think most people don't know, is the energy you have put into this business is based off personal experience and your personal journey of needing that CD to promote yourself or your highlight reel. And it's everything's so instant now, and everyone has a phone in their pocket. But the problem is, it's not easy to hold your phone there, then go through, I'll be honest, 60, 70 clips in a game, and then having to edit them and delete them. And I have videos of my son's games from this weekend. I was sending them to my wife, and I'm like, wouldn't it just be easier just to have a camera system where she could watch it live? And that's the thing. And it's not going to cost the team thousands of dollars to do this. It is reasonably priced, and priced at a model to be successful for both sides of the equation.
Yeah, 100%, which is why I was asking you about the Amazon Prime thing, because I never know when they charge me, and I really don't care. I use and abuse Amazon Prime. And really, I tell my team at Replayer, that's exactly how our customers should feel. It's a feeling. At the end of the day, the relationship you have with a brand is a feeling. And we need to go after that feeling. They need to feel like they have the upper hand. And they should. They deserve to do so. And we'll work our asses off so that we have that right alignment. Yes, it started as, and maybe some of it still is based on my personal experience, but it grew much larger than that as I've been spending time in this market. That's why I take these like demo calls, because I'm still learning every day. A parent will come up on one of those calls and ask really interesting questions or tell me about their story. It's just another opportunity for me to get pumped up again about the problems that we're solving. But yeah, I love what I do, man. Love what I do.
Can you share with me how to find all your information about all of you folks?
Yeah, absolutely. Replayer.com, Replayer.com is our website. And then I am on LinkedIn, Orhan, Orhan Basak, Ajrendonvski. It's a very long last name, but you can probably get it from the title of something of this podcast or in the details. I'm on LinkedIn, and Replayer is also on LinkedIn. If you go on our site, if you want to learn more, you can get on a demo call. You can chat us on the site. One thing that is funny, we had this discussion internally as a team. One of my team members, she brought up, hey, you know what? Maybe we need to put something on the site, like a little badge that we're a startup, because I'm getting on a call with a lot of these people and they think we're like a giant company. Something on the site, like a little badge that we're a startup, because I'm getting on a word just by looking at our site.
My limited interaction with all of you via LinkedIn, I realized it's everyone that's posted on your company website. So my favorite question to ask to wrap this all up, who has been the greatest influence on you as a player? Because you did play, you had a professional career. And now who has been the greatest influence on you as an entrepreneur?
Man, you gave me goosebumps. There are a couple of people that come to mind. Obviously, as a player, I have to say the Brazilian Ronaldo. Love that guy. I was always in awe watching him. But as an entrepreneur and human, I would say my father. I lost him in 2019, unfortunately, to cancer, and he left us too soon. But he was a serial entrepreneur from Istanbul, Turkey. He taught me a lot, and he pulled me into the world of business at a very young age. I was probably around 7 working at the ice cream shop he had owned in Houston, Texas. I was at the cash register, and he taught me this: you're never selling and you never sell. There's a demand and you fulfill that demand, and there's a need and you fulfill that need. I miss that guy. I love you, Dad.
Wrapping this all up, both parts together, this is one of those conversations that's just being informed matters. There's a lot being said in this space right now. And not all of this lines up with reality. So take some time to understand how these systems actually work, what you're paying for, and what your player really is getting out of it. That is key. At the end of the day, it should come back to helping players grow, make game, and making the game more accessible for families. I appreciate you taking the time to go through both parts once again. Hey everyone, if you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have enjoyed what I've been trying to do, the messages that I'm putting out there, please give me some ratings, some stars on all the podcast sites that you listen to this on. Give me a review, share this, share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm really trying to make a difference in our soccer community. So I hope you guys have enjoyed all this. And until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.